Hi, this is Dave. My apologies that the seminar last evening was not recorded, so I'm doing it again and beginning at the beginning. Thank you once more for your input, suggestions, questions. I really appreciate that, and it's helped me to incorporate some for discussion. A couple of ones that I couldn't find anywhere to insert, I want to respond to directly. One is, how long does changing a mind and rewiring of mind software and brain hardware take? One simple study, some of you have heard me mention this before, is NASA did an experiment where they put the participants in headgear that would exactly reverse the images. Up was down, down was up. So the people wearing the headset, wearing it 24 hours a day, would have to carefully move about and plan every sort of micro move until they noticed at day 25 of being in the headgear 24 hours a day, their brains corrected so that they no longer needed to do this. Their brains had rewired. Now, a group within this group were given a day off at day 15 for 24 hours. When they put their headsets back on, same thing happened, and it took them about 25 days from that point on for their brains to rewire. So this is a kind of all-or-nothing example. Most of the changes that you experience and create and you will co-create with your clients are not that you revert back once and you have to start all over. It's a process, and especially more complex behavior, so it may take longer to do that. But usually we think about doing something consistently for a month. You drive in the same way to go to work each day. After about a month, you can start listening to an audiobook. So that's a rough estimate. Another, I wanted to give an example. I was asked for a case example. I want to give you just a very brief overview, a vignette that I use a microsystem that you haven't heard about yet. It's not published yet. It will be. And I want you to listen to see what you can discern about what the system is to see if it may be workable for you. I was working mentor coaching with the CEO of a regional healthcare facility. It's a multi-state area coverage, a broad spectrum of healthcare services. He focused in one session on the turnover of healthcare providers and gave the example of the initial contact person in each of the facilities, the person that the patient first contacted, first presented to the service area. It's kind of like the receptionist in a physician practice. The turnover rate for those first responders to a patient, new or otherwise, was 51% in 1 year. Over half left in the prior year. He wondered if I had any suggestions for dealing with this. I asked him what the usual presentation of the patient was, specifically what the patient first said or asked, and he wasn't sure. I asked him what the usual response of that initial point of contact person was to the patient, specifically what that person from his organization said in response to the patient. He wasn't sure. I asked him if he would do a survey to find out these two answers. And the next time we met, he had done a very fast multi-state survey. He indicated the usual presentation of the patient was frustration with the response time and the significant wait for an appointment, and with a federally and state funded organization, there was little that could be done about it. He indicated that the most ubiquitous staff response was to explain to the frustrated or upset patient how overwhelmed the system was, the shortage of resources and funding that they dealt with in a publicly funded healthcare system, and how a delay could be expected. They gave the patient information that wasn't working for either the patient or the person, the point of contact person. I gave him a little bit of explanation, a couple of sentences. Now, the most basic desire we have as humans is to be effective and to have the understanding and the resonance with the patient about their frustration, their helplessness, even their fear of their medical condition by that front desk person, and how being given information, facts, and data led to further frustration, mostly feeling not heard. I suggested that he consider a simple change to respond to the patient initially presenting with some kind of understanding response, an empathic resonance, in other words, such as, I hear your frustration. Then to frame the response, the second sentence, in a collaborative framework, such as, let's address how we can proceed from here and have your concerns addressed. So it was to resonate and then respond rather than react with information. We're now only 6 months from that beginning systematic change, and the turnover rate in those 6 months since that plan was introduced is 6%, down from 51%. So here's the system. It's the Texas three-step. Pause, resonate, respond. Pause to get grounded and centered. In other words, the receptionist, the person, instead of reacting immediately to the patient, to pause, to take a breath, and then to resonate with that person, the patient. You know, I hear your frustration, or I understand you're upset. To then respond and collaboratively frame it as where we can go from here. The we is the together, concern about what the patient needs, not about explaining the system. So those are that's the Texas three-step, to pause, to resonate, to respond. Pause to get grounded and centered, empathically resonate first with yourself to be sure in that second you're grounded and centered, then to respond to the person, in this case, it's your client. And if the client begins with frustration or upset, you know, I understand you're upset. I hear you with your concern. And then to respond in that way, first to your client, then together, collaboratively frame it as, let's look at how we can address this. So pause, resonate, respond. I'll be moving now to what we are talking about. Again, if you have questions, even after our final seminar, feel free to email me. So we're talking about creating new wellness experience and identity. We've already discussed the first five steps. Recognize authorship of the story, own your story, assess the plot and storylines, decide what to change, and map changes. So for steps 6 and 7, we're going to address how to create new wellness experiences and identity. The step 6, author new experiences. We trust our stories. They are our identity. When our stories and our behaviors don't fit, we experience a disharmony. We have to change one or the other then to restore harmony. Sometimes we revise our stories, Sometimes we even change how we see reality. Now, we've considered if your wellness story doesn't allow you to do certain things, if your story is that you're a procrastinator, it will disallow you from finishing early. If your story says you don't know how to work out, then you'll live out this assumption. So at first, the idea of change may create a kind of anticipatory excitement. Then, right on the cusp of action, a certain kind of anxiety. Then, when you proceed, expansion and ultimately effectiveness and mastery. So here are 12 AAA principles of change to author a new story: awareness, acceptance, and action. 1. You're writing your own story. Is it working? For each component, what are the results? Honestly assess each of these storylines with a question: is it working? And make that a yes or no immediately. Your personal wellness story, mind, body, spirit. Your business career story. Your relationship story. Your money story. When people look at what they're most wanting or looking forward to do and what they're most afraid of in the next chapters of their lives, they often respond with vague dreams yet specific fears. The top of the list of long-term concerns usually are led by two things: health and money. Now, one not so secret to success is you have to pay for that success in full. So you might as well find out what the price is, pay it in full, pay it as soon as possible, and then enjoy the benefits of success. The price is always some form of energy, whether that energy is money, time, work, experience. If you get something for which you haven't provided value or benefit, you're still going to have to pay in some way. For example, if you incur debt in order to purchase something before you've earned the money, you simply end up paying more for it. Another non-secret: people who truly enjoy getting what they want are those who find a way to enjoy the price. You're doing it right now, hopefully, and enjoying the learning and the thinking about things in different ways. I certainly am, in sharing and responding to you. 2, you're writing your own story. It takes just as much energy to create any belief in your story, positive or negative, based on past, present, future, adaptive or maladaptive, the same energy. The belief of scarcity takes just as much energy as abundance. You generate the energy and give power to your story. Now, here's a subtle but crucial distinction. You give specific power to your story, and it ultimately assumes its own momentum. And remember, you're not the subject of that process. You're still the creator of it. And here are a short list of some results when you focus on what you don't want: fear, anxiety, anger, confusion, annoyance, helplessness, guilt. 3, you're writing your own story. Decide what you want. The primary reason people don't get what they want is they're not quite sure what they want. Here's a neuroscience and law of attraction question. How does the brain work like a travel agent or a travel website? First two questions: where do you want to go? When do you want to get there? Having a goal is like MapQuest. You program in where you want to go, make a map, and determine the time. You do that each coaching session if you follow that model. What do you want to focus on? Where do you want to get us to? Two coordinates of a map, as we discussed in our first seminar. Now, a caveat: to know what not to do may be at least as important at times as knowing what to do. You may not always know what the next right thing is, but you can almost always know what it isn't. And consider this, what you resist, you draw toward you, because resistance is an engagement. For example, anger is as passionate an attachment as love. And most suffering is the result of resisting what already is. People resist going to the doctor. They aren't afraid of doctors. They're afraid their denial may be confronted. 4, you're writing your own story. Do you have specific measurable goals? In a Harvard study begun in the mid-1950s, 10 to 15% of the Harvard Business School graduates fashioned a vision and specific goal for their life and business. 5 decades later, that 10 to 15% had 90% of the assets of the entire group. Motivation increases as soon as you're clear about the goal and the payoff. Focus enhances when you have a specific plan and strategy. I'd suggest reviewing from the workbook the exercise 11 Steps to Ignite Success, beginning on page 3.6. It's estimated that less than 10% of people have measurable goals. 100% of people have good ideas, at least some. The difference between a good idea and a goal, measurement and time. Where, when, the travel agent question. Here's a good idea. I'd like to lose some weight. Here's a goal. I will reach 185 pounds by July 31st, 2025. Here's a good idea. I want to save some money for retirement. Here's a goal. I will pay myself first by setting up an automatic transfer from my checking account of $250 to my retirement fund the first day of every month. And hear how that's a decision you only have to make once. One of my favorite sages of the last 2 or 3 decades is George Costanza, who said, I like things I don't have to think about. And think about how much we do that. We want things in the default mode so we can think about other things. Now, also then, write a breakthrough goal, something that would stretch you, bring incredible opportunities, move you to a higher level, a quantum leap. Then reread your goals, regular and breakthrough, twice a day, when you wake up, when you go to bed. 8, you're writing your own story. Small changes lead to big changes. Issues that can seem overwhelmingly large and maybe insurmountable can be approached by looking at it as simply as possible, to specify a next step, to shrink the change. Here's an example. Some of you have heard me mention this. Terry Fox ran the Marathon of Hope. It's a cross-Canada run of 3,339 miles. He had an artificial leg, so his running style was a shuffle and a hop. He managed, though, about 24 miles a day on average and completed the run in 143 days. He was immediately interviewed after the race and asked, with being exhausted and having thousands of miles ahead, how did you manage to do it? His response simply was, I just kept running to the next telephone pole. Now, he knew where the telephone pole was in, he knew where his goal was, but he shrank the change to the next telephone pole. So divide up your work. Focus on and complete one thing at a time. There's always something you can focus on. Let me give an example of that. During my specialty training in psychiatry, one of my first-year supervisors had a really puzzling picture on the wall, for me at least puzzling. It was a photograph that everything seemed out of focus. I met with him every week, and I'd glance at the photograph. Finally, toward the end of the year, I asked him about it. He said, well, look carefully, Dave. What do you see? I walked over to the photograph to get a closer look. Closer didn't help. it still seemed out of focus. I saw no particular aesthetic value, and my experience and considerable interest in photography did not help whatsoever. I said, Steve, the only thing I noticed is that there's one branch of one tree in focus in the entire picture. He said, that's exactly why I have it hanging there. It's my reminder that when things seem confusing and blurry, there's always at least one thing you can have in focus and see clearly, which is why he was a great supervisor for first-year residents. 6. You're writing your own story. Be consistent in the pursuit of your goals. And to revisit this from the initial comments, it takes maybe 25 to 30 days to etch a new pathway in your brain to have it be permanent. Write your new story consistently for it to become the default mode. And some more complex behavior patterns will take longer than that. Overall wellness is not based on some monumental choice, but on little things. What you do every day, how you create a system for that. Remember we talked about from the book that I mentioned from the wellness expert, Younger Next Year, working out 6 days a week, having consistency with that, making it part of a routine, a system, not something you decide to do or find time for each day. 7, you're writing your own story, the benefit of doing more of what's working and less of what isn't working will become evident and self-perpetuating. This is, I think, a simple caveat as we listen to our clients with coaching. If it works, do more of it. If it doesn't work, do something else. We can foster change by conscious practices and effective tools. And if an infinite sea of new patterns and possibilities can be created for new goals. The caveat, you have to take action to diminish pre-programmed responses and write new script for new experiences. A new story has to replace the old story. It's learning combined with unlearning. Every time you learn something new, it may gradually, over time, overwrite the pattern that is already there and operative. So this new algorithm will ultimately overwrite the one that applies to something very specific. It's a process, though. There are no shortcuts, since long-term change requires consistent practice, repetition, to groove new pathways and new neural networks. But there are effective and efficient methods to accelerate optimum change to ensure transformation. And that's what we've been talking about. And I want to spend a bit of time in just a moment about the seventh step, about how we transform our operating model, identity. Number 8 of the AAA principles of change to author a new story. You're writing your own story. Ask for feedback to your spouse or partner. On a scale of 1 to 10, would you rate the quality of our relationship? To your employees or colleagues, on a scale of 1 to 10, how am I doing? And then, if you're really bold and brave, how can I get to 10? Here's a brief story. A tribe in southern Africa called the Babimba has an interesting practice. When they hear a story of a person doing something wrong, something that destroys the social net of their tight community, all work in the village halts. The people gather around the offender and one by one recite all that person has done right in their life. Good deeds, responsible behavior, thoughtful acts. This honest feedback on misbehavior has a time-honored consequence to allow the person to reclaim their better part. They remember who they are and why they were important to the life of the village. This may have been an original 360-degree feedback. Now, even without this kind of social network and feedback, we can relax and remember our way back into alignment with our true selves. We can get centered and reconnect with our essence. So you may want to think about finding people who already successfully do what you do and get what you want, and research that, not to copy, but to do your own version of it, to see what works. Ask, learn, question, but it has to be your story. Now, guess who said this? It's not that I'm so smart. It's that I stay with problems longer. That was Albert Einstein. So here's one interesting finding, to me at least. After giving a complete presentation about the benefits of their services or product, more than 60% of seasoned salespeople forget to ask for the order. How to ask is a crucial aspect. Ask clearly, confidently, sincerely. Virginia Satir, a well-known family therapist, was hired by the Michigan State Department of Social Services to submit a proposal on how to restructure the Department of Social Services to better serve the client population. 60 days later, she provided the department with a 150-page report. They said two things. This is the most amazing report, and how'd you come up with all these brilliant ideas? She said simply, I just asked all the social workers in your departments what it would take for the system to work better. Now, as a sidebar here, you may have notice that each of these AAA principles of change to author a new story begins the same way. You're writing your own story. That's actually the first four steps of the roadmap. Recognize, observe, assess, decide, compressed into the shorthand of awareness and acceptance. The third A, just 12 action steps. 9, you're writing your own story. Get success insurance. A review of research on goal setting, that's page 3.5 of your workbook, helps us to understand two essential components, why people give up on goals, and the inverse, how effective goal setting can ensure long-term achievement, success insurance. 10, you're writing your own story, take a chance. A young chiropractor just out of professional school wanted to open a practice in Carmel, California. He was told multiple times he'd never make it. There's already one chiropractor for every 8 people in Carmel. He went to 12,500 homes and talked to 6,500 people. He asked 3 questions. Which location should I open my office, the north or west side of town? Should I have extra office hours, 7 to 9 in the morning or 5 to 7 in the afternoon? And which newspaper should I advertise in? Then he added as he was leaving, when I have an open house party, would you like an invitation? In the first month, he took in $72,500. In the first year, he netted over $1 million. 11, you're writing your own story. It's never too late to start. Don't let conventional wisdom or limiting assumptions ghostwrite that story. Cliff Beyond was a 61-year-old Australian sheep herder. He heard about a cross-country race from Sydney to Melbourne and decided to enter. He showed up in his Oshkosh overalls and work boots. The official looked at him like he was crazy They said, well, this is a race of over 800 kilos. The most seasoned runners in the world compete. Do you have any running experience and equipment? He said, yeah, I run after my sheep every day, and I got these boots and this baseball cap. So when the race began, the world-class runners took off, as they were trained to do. Cliff started shuffling along in his boots. Conventional wisdom, you're supposed to run 18 hours and sleep 6. Nobody told Cliff this. So when the other runners were sleeping, he just kept shuffling along. They couldn't tell him he wasn't supposed to. He shuffled along for 3.5 days. He cut 5.5 hours off the world record. We each have beliefs that limit us. Find the story that will improve you and start believing that. If there were no barriers, what would your ideal life be? What's your stretch goal? And 12, you're writing your own story. Everything is okay in the end. If it's not okay, it's not the end. For tens of thousands of years, before books and computers, we transmitted our essence and principles by story. Story linked to the past, organized the present, and illuminated the future. Story allowed us to connect with each other's humanity in the paths crossed on the long journeys out of Africa to populate the rest of the world. Then the anatomy and physiology of our brains grew by putting thoughts and feelings into stories. Stories informed, instructed, inspired, governed, organized, and created memory. Story is the most powerful way we communicate. Stories give birth to possibility. Stories are a way that we simply resonate with our earlier selves, how we connect with others, and how we create a roadmap to proceed. Your story is yourself, your life, and what will survive you. At some point in the distant future, all that will be left of you, of each of us that will survive us, is our story. Be sure to get it right. Step 7, program new identity to incorporate and sustain the changes. For our operating system to incorporate this process of creating a new story, breaking the script, beginning new responses of thinking, feeling, behaving, we have to be aware of this and aware of this process. It's something as coaches we can help our clients become aware of by highlighting or conceptualizing the changes at a immediate experience of how they may feel discomfort at doing something new, or highlighting how different a behavior is, or even at a different conceptual level, to help them incorporate the changes into their operating system, their identity, by pointing out what they're doing, how they're doing it, and how they may be seeing themselves and experiencing themselves differently at this time by asking about each of those. Now, one additional level of just thinking about this for us as coaches is to look at the surface story and the shadow story. The surface story is what we're conscious of, what's logical, conscious, intellectual. That's the 5 to 10% of our operating system that we are readily aware of. The shadow story may be the ways that unconscious operating system manifests, and this is what we're listening for in the process of our work with clients. Now, here's an example of a shadow story being specifically different, even consciously, of the surface story. The surface story, I want to make more money. The shadow story is, well, I don't really think I have what it takes. I think if I try really hard and fail, I'll be embarrassed. Or, you know, I didn't think I'd ever really have money, so I hadn't thought about it. So the conscious and the unconscious story can manifest in different ways. Here's a simple example in a different dimension. I want to claim my freedom and become totally my own person. That's the surface story. The shadow story, whether or not it's conscious, well, my partner acts like I'm taking it away from them when I'm self-sufficient. So think about how you can listen for surface and shadow stories and how you can get your client to be curious with you and begin to think about that in a collaborative way of responding. So let's look for just a moment at following success trails. Have you said some version of the following or heard clients say, I want to change careers, but I don't know what I do instead. I'd like to really get in shape, but I'm not sure where to start. I want to play a bigger game, but I don't quite know what it is. First, decide how you want to expand. Then consider picking success trails to inform you, not to follow, not to mimic or copy, but seek out a mentor, books, programs, a mentor coach, resources to help you. Watch someone's doing, what someone is doing that's like what you might want to do. Here's an example of that. When my good buddy, Art, who I had done a lot of stuff with as a friend, he was my assistant coach for both of our kids' basketball teams, and he had left IBM as a senior executive to form his own consulting company. He was immensely successful by this time. When he heard I was transitioning from psychoanalytic practice and completed my professional coach training and certification, he flew to Houston to take me to dinner. A few years earlier, he had left IBM, and he knew that I knew about this. He was the lead person in his country, in his own area. He told me how he chose five very successful people who had done what he intended to do a very early retirement, start his own consulting firm, ask them to lunch or dinner and pick their brains about what he was about to do. And he advised me to do the same. And he said, you can count me as the first one. It worked for both of us. Some business people with instant global recognition still pick his brain for substantial picking fees. And I can tell you this worked very well. So think about how you can look in the outline about choice enhancement. I won't go into detail here, but it's very important to regulate your state of mind to make an optimum choice. Remember the Texas three-step. And here's a quote from Buddhist teaching that indirectly informed that. Return to the earth now if your mind is troubled and your heart is uncertain. For it is by returning to the beginning that we can clearly see the path. And even the metaphor here is of grounding. So, in looking at change and transition, our brains are very efficient machines. Don't waste energy. Simplicity can be to take the path of least resistance. Even when, and especially when the brain is inclined to repeat the old story. to think creatively, though, to break the script, new pathways need to be considered outside the cycle of repetition, of usual experience. Now, stimulation for new insight can be a circumstance where the brain can't predict what will happen next. Catalyst for insight is a novel stimulus, new information, new context, the questions that we ask our client to break the script. The change is the event, the situation. You change a behavior, move to a new city, have a baby, take a new job. As we focus on change, we address the rituals of change, the work tools, the SMART goals. This is the content. Now, the transition is the process. It's the internal story of change, a shift in orientation, even of self-definition, as we will talk and are talking more about this transition of the operating system that we also call identity. The transition attends to the seasonal cycles as well as the daily weather. As you create change and embrace transition, you let go gradually, step by step, of the old story, the outlived chapters, and evolve into your new story. This is the P of the roadmap. Program new identity that the changes are internal to sustain and enhance by being incorporated into your operating system that ultimately will be as automatic as the old story was. Jung said it very simply. Some problems can't be solved. They have to be outlived. This is the learning and unlearning that we're talking about. Now, I want to conclude, or semi-conclude, with the most frequent mistakes made in writing a new wellness story. And these are in your outline as well. One, not knowing you don't know. So how can you know what you don't know? We do that as coaches all the time with our clients. We believe we know, which blinds us to our ignorance. This, in turn, causes us to again be blind to signs that we may be mistaken in our assumptions. So to know to ask is half the answer. Two, stopping at the first right answer. When we're solving problems or writing a new story, we may stop at the first reasonable action. Now, this can be a very correct strategy. It can stop us from considering, though, other right answers, other correct strategies that could be more effective. So this is a consideration to dose time and titrate your consideration, not to avoid action, but to take informed action and then definitive steps one at a time. I want to introduce number three with a very brief quiz. Five frogs sat on a log. They all considered their options, looked at strategies, steps to do this, planned a systematic strategy to jump off the log. Then they decided they would jump off. So, how many frogs were left on the log? Well, five were left because they only planned, strategized, and decided. They didn't commit to act. Number three is procrastination. Now, I'm talking about maybe a broad theme, putting off an exercise program, not paying yourself first, not saving for emergencies, not saving for retirement, taking care of others, but not yourself. But every one of these begins with a first step. So shrink the change, even when you have a system for any or each of these, to a first step. And then what happens after what happens next? Most of us live our lives as if there were an unlimited amount of time left. We may not have much sense of emergency, contributing at times to a lack of focus. When the two-minute warning sounds in football, a team sometimes achieves more in that last 2 minutes than they did in the previous 28. This imminent deadline, a limited, finite amount of time to accomplish goals, focuses concentration and increases effort. In our lives, we only rarely have a two-minute warning. We play as if the notion of finite time is there, but it's an abstraction, something we acknowledge, but may not really internalize. Life is finite. It's just that the game clock is invisible. Or inefficient time management. Managing energy is a key to success. This begins by knowing your own needs, your own ideals. How, especially to when you have a plan and a system, how to enter and exit various states of mind and which works best for a particular task. You know, for example, writing and editing, two very different functions, two different parts of the brain. Usually helpful not to mix the two, but to enter a state, sustain it with focus and attention, and optimum use of energy. Cluster activities that require the same state of mind to sustain a plan and a focus for a period of time rather than adding in other things or being distracted. And this will be very helpful for those of you who work with ADD and ADHD clients to help them focus in this way and create a system around exactly what they do. And coaching can be immensely helpful for these clients. Identify what enhances your energy, anticipation, creativity, pleasure, meditation, prayer. Identify what depletes your energy, toxic people or situations, negative mindset, lack of focus. And five, ambiguity. If you're unclear about what specific options are or what you're creating in that way, it might be difficult to pursue them, especially things you haven't done before, and uncertainty can lead to decision paralysis. What may look like resistance for a client may simply be a lack of clarity for specifically what the next step is. So people are likely to change when new behavior is clear, specific, stepwise. The antithesis of that, eat a healthier diet. I want to lose weight. Save for the future. Where do you begin? When you want to affect change, you need to script specific behaviors and to help your client do that from their point of reference. Six, too many choices. Studies show how we can have a decision paralysis when there are too many choices. At some point, choice debilitates rather than liberates, and someone retreats to the default mode of not making a choice. There are a number of studies on this, but you may listen for a client to help them look at narrowing and specifying a next best action. Seven, lack of persistence. The truly challenging, courageous part of change is not the initial decision or the initiation of a new order of things. Those are tough in themselves, but it's the willingness, the commitment to stay the course. And eight, not following success trails. And I gave the example earlier of that, of looking at people, picking their brains, doing your own research, and having an optimum stopping point. There's a great deal of research on looking at what is an optimum stopping point of deciding when to stop doing research and deciding to act. So we've talked about the wellness story from perspectives of cells, mind, brain, and story. Now, a final brief word about genes. Epigenetics is a study of the ways in which our experiences change the ways genes operate. Our experiences program how active our genes will be. So there's a difference between having a gene and that gene expressing its signature proteins to have a particular effect. Out of our more than 30,000 genes, some express themselves constantly, some only at a particular time in life, some only for a certain organ of the body, and some only at certain behavioral or emotional prompts. We now know that our genes and our environment, including our behavior, are reliant on each other. What we do as well as what we eat can turn genes on or off. Genes cannot operate independently of their own environment, internal or external. Our nutrition, our emotions, our social interactions all interact in some way. For example, when you eat broccoli, broccoli contains a form of B6 which prompts a specific enzyme to produce the amino acid L-tryptophan, which contributes to synthesize dopamine. And dopamine is a neurotransmitter, as you know, that, among other things, stabilizes mood. So, a final word, and finally, the conclusion, I promise, your true story. The residual outcome of your past thoughts, feelings, and actions are not who you are. What you have done with your body and eating may not be your true body self, your identity. Who you are is what you're creating this moment. Write your genuine life story, your informed wellness story. Write the truest story possible. And a final story. A small boy approached Walt Disney and asked him, "How can I be like you one day?" Disney took this very seriously, thought for a moment, held up his finger to the boy to let him know he was going to answer, but he was still thinking about it. Disney finally said four words: think, believe, dream, dare. And remember, the most important lesson, I think, from everything I've said during our time together for these four seminars, just keep going to the next telephone pole. Now, it's been a privilege to be with you these four seminars. I've learned a lot. I hope you have. And I hope it's met your expectations. Thank you for your energy, your presence, your contributions to the content and the process of this. And I hope we'll have opportunities to cross paths and collaborate again. If there are any questions that remain or points you haven't made, fire me an email. Thank you very, very much. It's been a privilege.